Thanks for tuning in to Arts Underground. I'm your host, Katie Ganaway, and our guest today has a special role in our creative community. If you have attended a local theater performance and saw someone standing below the stage signing the actions and words being conveyed in the play, that was probably Stephanie Hyatt. Stephanie interprets for hearing impaired and hearing disabled folks, and she is here today to tell us more. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
It's pollen season, pollen. So I'm trying to survive. but that's beside the point. So let's start off with your background in education. You started at Lee High School. You were there for 15 years, and you started an ASL club. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. Actually, though, I would say I didn't start the ASL club. The kids did.
Okay.
Several students knew they had seen me interpreting in the community and knew I could sign. And this was back at a time when they were implementing a new program called a power hour, where the kids got an hour for lunch, but during half of it, they were supposed to go to a club or a meeting of some sort. And so some of the students just asked me if we could start an ASL club. And eventually there were about 30 kids who were coming to the ASL club from New Century and from Lee to learn sign language for half of their lunch hour. Mm-hmm. And as we did that, I started by just teaching them like basic ASL. If you were to look for ASL University online, you would find the curriculum that most of us use locally to teach ASL. It's a kind of a national curriculum, and it's available free with videos. So anyone interested in ASL could get online and learn that.
ASL University.
Okay. ASL University, I think the website looks something like lifeprint.com, but just a Google search for ASL University will get you there. And it's a great resource for anyone who's just kind of interested, testing the waters, looking to see if maybe they want to take a class. So we started with that, and the kids were so smart. Like, teenagers learn language so fast. We should all learn languages at a much younger age than, you know, than my middle age trying to learn Spanish right now.
Oh.
But it was hard to keep up with them. They were so fast. We went beyond that curriculum very quickly. And because Lee was such a great performing arts program, the kids had the idea of, hey, we should interpret the Lee shows for the community. And so I reached out into the deaf community, and they were interested in coming to high school shows. And so, okay, great, let's do that. And so they really led it. The kids were the ones who were like, let's do these things. And then I was up there as the lead interpreter, but, you know, there was a different kid doing each song and doing various roles. We'd have two or three people standing and signing it together, and they'd come after school for rehearsals it was great.
I think that in and of itself is great because you created another avenue of accessibility there.
Absolutely.
Right. So let's talk about your inspiration to learn ASL yourself.
Yeah. So when I was a little girl, my grandmother was what we call an LDA, a late deafened adult. And so in her 40s, she lost her hearing.
Oh.
Well, that was about the time I was born, and I was the first grandchild. So about the time I was born, she was losing her hearing. She was going to learn ASL. So as a very young child, I learned ASL with her. And very quickly, she sort of gave up on it at one point. She did not stick with it. As I said, it's much harder as an adult to learn a language than it is as a kid. But because I started learning it so young and then was around so many other deaf people, I just picked up the language because little kids who are immersed in a language pick it up. So I have a deep memory, a core memory, I guess. When I was about, give you my age here, but 6 or 7 or 8 years old, somewhere in there, the movie Annie came out.
Okay.
Based on the Eileen musical.
Eileen Quinn?
Yes.
I can't remember.
The red hair.
Yes.
And I thought it was great, right? I was in elementary school, and I just loved it. And so I talked my grandmother into watching it with me. And I remember during the song, The Sun Will Come Up Tomorrow, looking over to her to see if she was loving it as much as I was. And she was sound asleep.
Oh, no.
And I asked her about it. And she said, well, I can't hear it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I would figure out how to sign that song for her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my little girl signs for signing that song were very, what we would call it now is it was very English driven. It was me signing it like word for word, the sun will come out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that is not how you would sign it in ASL. But I was determined to make her see that song and love it as much as I did. And I think she was moved by my efforts to do so. But that started in me, somebody who loved the arts and loved musicals and loved, you know, theater, even at that age, that inspired in me a wish to make theater accessible to everyone.
I see a lot of crossover in displaying the emotions in theater and displaying the emotions in ASL. And you and I have talked about sort of giving the emotion, giving the expression of what's going on in a song, what's going on in some dialogue. Can you talk about that, how you learned to do that expressiveness with your signing?
Yeah, absolutely. It is funny when you see someone post on Facebook or something and they'll have a clip of someone interpreting music and they're like, wow, watch their expressions.
Like I told you about the Kendrick Lamar ASL performance.
Yes. And that was a deaf performer who was performing with Kendrick. But for us, those expressions are actually part of the grammar. Like our expression changes the
facial
meaning
grammar.
Of the sign.
Yes,
facial
I
grammar, we call it. Exactly. Facial grammar. And so I can change the meaning of a sign based on the shape or movement of my mouth with mm-hmm. the sign, or based on the expressions I use or the way I move my body while I am signing something, it can have a completely different meaning. And so with music or with theater, like if you're interpreting at a doctor's office, obviously you are just word for word, mm-hmm. let me
very
convey.
Very sterile.
Very sterile. Yes. That's a great word. That's a great word. Very sterile. But when you're doing theater, and like I always try to go beforehand to watch like a rehearsal so I can see how the different performers are conveying themselves. What is their body language? What are their expressions? And I try to copy that as much as possible when I'm interpreting. Now, how I learned that, I'm not sure. I think probably learning sign language at such a young age, surrounded by deaf people who did it naturally because it's part of their
right.
culture and their language and their communication method. I think probably I just learned it because I was around it. But I will say when I am, for lack of a better word, directing an ASL performance, right, teaching other people to be a part of it, that is something we have to work on. Is like, okay, you got to get out of yourself. And actors do it too, right? You've got to get out of yourself and put on the persona of whomever it is you're doing.
And you performed in an all ASL version of Alice in Wonderland, correct?
That's right. We shadowed it. And so when we shadow, what happens
is...
How did
that go? Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool experience. And I love fantasy for being so open to doing so many of
fantasy
these things.
Fantasy Playhouse, Children's Theater and Academy.
That's right. Absolutely. No, and they are fantastic at working with us with trying to make things accessible in the deaf community. But what we did was for every actor, there was an ASL performer mm-hmm. who was with them. And so basically we would stand kind of right beside them, behind them. We learned the blocking with them. We walked with them. We were dressed all in black, but like I did the Mad Hatter. And we ended up, you know, following them and performing with them. My daughter, who also signs, was doing the Cheshire Cat. Mm-hmm. And the actor playing the Cheshire Cat, not at the last minute, maybe about a month before the performance, ended up having to have surgery and was unable to perform. And so rather than recasting it, what they decided to do was have the Cheshire Cat perform only in sign language and have a voice from,
That's
you know, the voice amazing. Of God. It was really cool, right?
Okay.
And she has, again, she grew up around the deaf community, so she has great facial expressions and was a dancer, and so she had all of this, you know, movement going on.
Right.
She's my daughter, but I thought she was amazing. Like, I thought it was a fabulous performance. And so then we had, you know, all in sign language. And for that performance, Fantasy Junior, if you've ever been to a Fantasy Playhouse production, mm-hmm. Fantasy and Fantasy Junior do all of the, you know, intros. And it's the only time Fantasy Junior has ever spoken because Fantasy Junior used sign language.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask, too, in our discussion before this, you mentioned that James and the Giant Peach was pretty...
That was
crucial
the first,
for you. Yeah.
That was the
dress
first
rehearsal
one.
For that. Yeah.
That's right. So what we decided and what we've done at Fantasy a number of times is we will usually interpret, if they do a sensory-friendly performance, which sometimes they have, we'll interpret that. If they don't, then we'll do the dress rehearsal, because that way we don't have to worry about where people are seated. We can put them all together and not worry about, you know, Fantasy sells a lot of season tickets. Getting people all together in one area to see an interpreter is just easier at the dress rehearsal. And so I approached Fantasy about this maybe 18 or 19 years ago with James and the Giant Peach. And that was the very first show that we did. And I convinced a couple of other interpreters to do it with me. Ideally, when we do a show, we like for there to at least be two people, so that you can basically be doing dialogue, going back and forth.
Right.
When it's only one person, what I do is we call it throwing focus, but I shift my body as I'm being one person versus the other. And so, yeah, James and the Giant Peach was the first one that I was involved with. The first shadow interpreted performance that happened in Huntsville was actually done with Huntsville Community Chorus, and they did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Oh.
And that was actually, I think, the year before I moved to Huntsville. And then there was a group called the Sign Painters, who I performed with. A lot of older Huntsville people will remember. But they used to go around and try to, rather than bring performances to the deaf community, their goal was to help the hearing community sort of be more aware of sign language. And so my goal has sort of been the opposite, is how do we bring performances to the deaf, and that's what we did with James and the Giant Peach. So that was the first one, and from there we kicked off just a number of where we would do one, two, sometimes three Fantasy shows in a year, and then the high school shows are also really, really popular. Musicals are popular. Our deaf community loves the musicals. It's a lot of fun to watch all of the, you know, the big spectacle of the dance numbers and the performances. So we do a lot of those as well.
You mentioned with performances, there are sometimes two people, there's sometimes one person. What do you do when it does have to be just you, like when you feel tired?
Oh,
like,
because
you, again, we had talked before this, but you said if it's a musical, if they have a ballad, that's your time to rest.
It is.
But if you don't have that luxury in a play, a concert, something like that, how do you reserve your energy?
Yeah, you don't. You just push through.
No.
I mean, good shoes are really important. You know,
right.
Thick soles, because you're standing up while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. I think every performer has that issue. I've been in plays where I have been a voice actress, right? And I have been on stage the entire time. Usually then you get to sit down at least sometimes. Your character isn't standing the whole time. It is a challenge, and it is not ideal to have one person do it. But in a lot of these situations, it's a trade-off. Will my back ache the next day? Probably. But will we have gotten through the performance? Yes. It's tough. That is probably the hardest thing about it.
What has been the most challenging, shall I say, song or piece of dialogue that you've had to interpret?
Yeah, okay.
Or one that comes to mind.
Two come to mind, and for very different reasons.
Go ahead.
One was in Cats. So when Huntsville High did Cats a couple of years ago, they asked me to come and interpret that one, and I did. And the song about, and I'm not sure if this is the title, but the one about pollicle dogs, angelical cats. Oh, my goodness. That one? And then the pirate one.
Okay.
Because they're just crazy, right? The most challenging thing as the person interpreting is you're trying to hear every word.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, when you're watching that performance, you're not making out every word.
Right.
But I have to, because I've got to turn it into another language. And so those two songs sort of were difficult. Even though I, you know, had read through them, had an idea of what they were, I just remember feeling a little bit lost. And I don't normally feel a little bit lost. It's okay, because the deaf community is watching it. They can tell it's crazy. They're just kind of laughing along with me. They're like, thank you for trying, sort of thing. We get it.
To get the context.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then the other thing that comes to mind is, you know, I do concerts in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And concerts in the park, Sarah, everybody at the Arts Council, they are great about bringing in people. And it's like, you know, family friendly and all of that.
Oh, no.
You know where I'm going. So some of the songs, like, even though maybe it's family friendly-ish, if you really listen to the words, mm-hmm. it's not all that family friendly. So right. I can remember my kids being at one with me, and my kids are grown. The youngest is in college, but they were slightly mortified, I think, as mom was signing Baby Got Back.
Oh,
right. And it's and you can feel the audience suddenly like eyes on you. They're like, oh, how's she going to do that? What is she going to do with that? And I love concerts in the park. And I love people will come up to me afterwards and they'll be like, oh, we saw you sign Hurricane. Is this the sign? And they'll, you know, they'll repeat it back to mm-hmm. me. Or you did Walk the Dinosaur. Is this the sign for dinosaur? And you're like, yeah, that's it. So there's some really good kind of, you know, community interactions there. And then suddenly it's a song like, you know,
right.
Okay, you just have to own it and do it.
How does an interpreter for the deaf censor themselves?
Well, you don't. I mean,
you don't.
You can't.
Okay.
Like, you can't ethically. Ethically, if it's said, you sign it, right?
I was thinking like a family-friendly setting, but I understand, yeah, ethically.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then there are some options where I'm not going to give the lyrics, you know, but there are some options where I can choose to sign it visually, which would be the purer way to do it, like mm-hmm. truly an ASL. Or I can just sign the word and
right.
let you interpret, you know, let you make those connections for yourself. And that's what I choose to do, because one would be potentially vulgar looking and the other would not be. Right. So
and,
I just choose to.
A lot of the time it's deaf parents rather than deaf children.
That's
so
right. That's right.
You have that benefit a little bit.
That's exactly right. A lot of the events we do are deaf parents bringing, you know, their hearing children to things. And it's something if they're bringing the kid to a fantasy show, they are able to not do what my grandmother did, which is fall asleep because they can't tell what's going on.
Right, right.
They're there with their kid, and their kid is enjoying it, and the parents are able to sort of access what the kids are seeing. Mm-hmm. And the same with concerts in the park, although that's more – we do have a good group of deaf adults who just enjoy coming to those concerts. Mm-hmm. It is a misnomer that deaf people don't like music. They absolutely like music, you know?
Because, I mean, it's widely understood, I think, that – people who are hard of hearing or deaf can feel the rhythm of the music.
That's right.
Yeah.
They can feel the music. But also, you know, if you think
and
about
see the
it,
expressions and
yeah. And if you just think about the social nature of being
right.
at a concert, you're out there with the community, you're grabbing, you know, tea and a you know, something at the food trucks
mm-hmm.
and you're just a part of your community in a beautiful background of nature and people are dancing and moving with the music and all of that is a very visual experience and a very sensory experience that doesn't necessarily involve
so the social aspect of it.
Yeah,
okay.
Just you hearing the music. I think that's a lot of it. I think it's – and I think that's why a lot of us are drawn there. It's not just for the bands. It's
right.
for the community nature.
Not so different.
Not so different.
The interpreting that you do is pro bono.
That's right.
You do this all for free, no cost to the theater groups, to the people who organize like concerts in the park. What made you decide to do this for free?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that takes us to maybe a little more serious subject that people should know about. And that is, you know, the Americans with Disability Act, ADA compliance,
right.
requires that deaf people be given access via sign language interpreters. And that is all well and good. However, there is a limited number of ASL interpreters. And when the Arts Council, for example, called me, it was partly because they could not find interpreters to hire to come mm-hmm. in for every performance just because of availability. And I have a lot of friends who are professional interpreters. And, you know, the reality is they only have so many hours in a day. And if it's a doctor's appointment that they can go and do and be at the hospital supporting once someone versus an arts, they're going to make the mm-hmm. decision that is the most supportive of the consumer, right? And so part of it is that it is not what I do professionally. I'm an educator professionally. In fact, at this point, I'm a technology educator professionally. Mm. It is expensive to maintain licensure in Alabama, and that is just a reality for people who sign. So for me, it was just a decision to, I do want to do this. I want to be involved in the community. I want to provide this service. I make sure that I don't step into roles where a paid interpreter would be available and would want to do that work, but yeah. So I choose to do it pro bono as a part of just the community, and so I end up working with arts organizations primarily, I also am involved, I am frequently at political events where they're not able to find someone. But then also, like, I do funerals and church services sometimes, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And you said it's the Arts Council that has reached out to you, but how have you developed these relationships with local theater, with local music entities?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. I think that's something that I hope all of your listeners would hear me say is I just reached out. For Fantasy to begin with, right, when that started, I had kids who were going to shows, and I had mentioned it to a deaf friend who was like, oh, man, I wish they were interpreted. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to find out. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out to Fantasy, and they, I think we had a meeting within the day. They were like, oh, my gosh, yes, let's do that.
That's
Talk
fantastic.
To us about how we can do this, right? And then because of that, I think actually the Arts Council contacted me because they contacted Fantasy.
Okay.
And then I'm also involved with Theater Huntsville. So, like, this summer we're doing Something Rotten, and we're going to interpret Something Rotten this summer. So, you know, it's just sort of snowballed where you're in the area and, yeah.
Word got around.
Word got around. But, and this is what I want to point out to any potential volunteers out there, word got around because I made myself available. Mm-hmm. I contacted people. I made a call and was just like, hey, you know, have you ever thought of this? Do you have a need for this? All of the arts organizations in town are driven by volunteers. Get out there.
I was going to say, what advice would you have for somebody who does know ASL but doesn't know how to get started in offering their services?
Oh, my goodness. Find me, like, or yeah, just find somebody. If there's something you're passionate about, if you see, like, those areas where you're like, wow, I wish this were available. So many church programs have been started by somebody who knew ASL and just decided that, you know, they would grow a program in a church. Or, yeah, I think it's just finding that niche, that thing that you love, and making sure that that your deaf friends know that you want to help make it available to them too.
Stephanie, what did it feel like when you were first able to have a conversation with a student who learned ASL from you?
So I remember when we were doing Tarzan mm-hmm. at Lee, one of my students, and I'll name her name, Mary Phillips, she's out in college now. We were going to do Tarzan. We were working on, like, what the songs would be. I always would make videos for them and, like, you know, post videos for them to go back and, you know, study them and learn them. And I don't think I had even posted a video for this one yet. I think she just kind of looked at the song. And a written version of ASL is called a gloss. You write down, like, how you think you'll sign it. And I think she had texted me and was like, hey, what do you think about, like, this as a gloss for these lines? And the song was You'll Be in My Heart. And at the end of ASL club one day, she was like, I have to show you. And she did it for me, and I just cried.
Ooh.
Like, it was so beautiful, and it was so perfect. And originally I had thought to myself, you know, well, I'm going to end up doing, you know, so much of this. And that was the moment at which I'm tearing up now just thinking about it. But it was that moment at which I was like, no, I got to let this go to the kids. They are ready to do most of this, right? And for that show, it was Tarzan at Lee, they really did do the vast majority of it. I can't even remember exactly what parts I did. I think there were a couple of songs that had, like, huge, long words in them. Like, there's a song about, you know, flora and fauna and mm-hmm. long words. I think I signed that one. But really, it was the kids just doing this amazing job and I think that's true. I think every teacher listening to this will know that moment, know that feeling where the reason you teach, the reason you're inspired to teach is you want those moments of them surpassing you, of them knowing it so well that they don't need you. They can write that on their own. They can, you know, interpret that on their own. It's prettier than you would make it. Like, it looks, yeah.
And spread it to the community.
Yeah, because then you realize that, you know, what you've been instilling in them, what you've planted in them is now growing, and now hopefully they'll reach out to the next person and teach someone else. And now that access is growing. If all of us knew enough sign language to, chat with our deaf friends.
Or to sign banging on a trash can or whatever it's
called
in Tarzan.
Okay, that was the easiest
scat.
One. Yeah, that was all. Yeah,
how
that
do
was,
you sign scat? I mean, that's a random
question. How did we sign that? I think what we did was we just signed that they're nonsense words, and then we showed the rhythm with our hands. Like, you can show rhythm threw your hands, and then we just told them, we just threw focus and said, now watch.
Okay.
So we gave them the sense of, and I signed to them, I did sign this to them, I signed to the folks that were in the audience, none of the words mean anything. And I signed like what it would look like. I said, they're nonsense words.
That's fantastic.
Just watch. And and they did. You know, I mean, that's.
I didn't know that there was a way to sign, this means nothing.
Like, yeah.
This is just silly.
This is nothing. Means nothing. It's silly. Silly words, nothing. Just watch. Right. That's the fun part. Yeah. 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 And so sometimes, you know, you think about it in theater, we talk about like breaking character or whatever.
Right.
Well, as the interpreter, you are the character, but you are also sometimes just conveying information. And you can do that a lot by how you change your eye contact, right? A good interpreter, when they're interpreting, will be making eye contact with the audience regularly to kind of check for understanding. And sometimes, like, some sign language is regional, right? And I grew up in Virginia with a grandmother from Tennessee, so I learned sign language that's slightly different than here. Now, I've been here for 30 years, but occasionally I'll use a sign that someone will be like, no, we sign that this way here.
Mm-hmm.
And so an interpreter interpreting for that
it's community, an accent.
It's an accent, right?
Okay.
But the person, if your sign bothers them or they're like, they think it might be confusing, they'll sign that word back to you the way they would sign it, right? Like, it's just like correcting someone's pronunciation, right?
Yeah.
And so as you're making eye contact, you're seeing that and you're picking up on those cues. And you do just change the way you're signing it. You just change that sign to whatever they've shown you. And so there are those moments where you're making that eye contact. And then there are other moments where you're in character and you're being Jane or you're being Tarzan and you're matching their facial expressions and you're not making eye contact because you're acting as that person. So, you know, there's communication is always a two-way street, right? And I think that's important to remember as you're doing something like that.
I'm curious, has there ever been a time, because you mentioned breaking character, has there ever been a time where you were just tickled and you couldn't get through a sign or something like that?
Yeah, I think Babies Got Back was definitely one of those moments. But that was not on their set list either. It was just a surprise. It's like, okay, here we go.
I guess we'll do this. Yeah.
I mean, I'm a child of the 80s. I know the song. I got you. We're going to do this. And my kids were there and they immediately were like looking at me to see, you know, what I was going to do. What I remember breaking character, honestly, was Jasper Hawthorne, who's the daughter of my neighbors, she sang Memory during Cats for Huntsville High School. And when she did, it was so hauntingly beautiful that I remember breaking character to turn and look and see what high school age child that voice was coming out of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I told the deaf people afterwards, I was like, that was amazing. Her voice is just perfect. And one of them signed back to me and signed, I could tell. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. I know I keep saying that word, but
I'm glad you're fascinated. I think it is fascinating. I think it's incredibly interesting. And I think people see like little snippets of sign language on, you know, Facebook, social media. And it's either something that's just like crazy out there because they're, you know, it's a rap song that's, you know, going wild and going viral. Or it's, you know, crazy woman down in Florida pretending to be a sign language interpreter and signing something completely different at a press conference. And so they don't really get to understand like the real sort of joy and beauty of this language.
I agree, because it's a language that I haven't had a whole lot of exposure to personally, but I say it's fascinating because it's a language that doesn't use your voice, but it's vast and varied. And my grandmother interpreted for the deaf for Huntsville City Schools, for Huntsville High School specifically, for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was kind of common whenever we would go see her. On a little bit of a sad note, I guess, when she passed away in 2019, after her funeral, we went to my grandparents' house and we all sat in a circle and several people in the family knew how to sign because her sister was deaf. Yeah. So seeing people sign to each other, I couldn't look away and I was trying to interpret it for myself.
So time to learn, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I will say, you know, I mentioned that LifePrint and the ASL University before. Mm-hmm. But anyone listening who's interested in ASL, AIDB, the Alabama Institute for the Deaf and Blind, they offer regular sign language classes, and they're leveled. So there's like a level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4. Sometimes people repeat the levels, and that's fine. But those are – I can't remember how much they cost, but it's a very good deal. And it's wonderful instructors. A lot of the instructors are deaf, which is perfect. That's your goal should be to learn sign language from a deaf person, because you will learn the true, pure part of, you know, the pure language that way. But I would say definitely contact AIDB, get on their mailing list, get registered for those classes because their classes are amazing.
I think my final question is so we're broadcasting this with a medium designed primarily for those who have the ability to hear, like you and me. And Stephanie, from your perspective, do you feel that there's more room for making the arts accessible in Huntsville and the Tennessee Valley? And what's one example of a helpful change that could be implemented?
Wow, that's a great question. It does strike me it's ironic that we're on the radio talking about ASL. However, any way that we can reach out and help people understand more about the deaf community and ASL is definitely warranted. As far as like where are we for improvement? There's room for improvement. There's always room for improvement. But, I think making shows accessible, every show, and making it possible for deaf people to request, those services easily, that's not always simple. There's a lead time involved. It's, finding the interpreters who can do it, bringing people in sometimes, like for concerts. Because of the scarcity, yeah. And there are groups like, for example, the Grateful Dead. Mm-hmm. They have an ASL interpreter who is, like, embedded with them, like, goes with them to every performance.
Okay.
And to me, I mean, that is the dream. That is the ideal, is that every touring group, every touring show just has an ASL interpreter who's there with them, who's a part of it, who they're going to be right here on the proscenium and they are going to be interpreting, the show or the concert. That's the ideal. That would be like the perfect world. And I think a step in that direction is something that the state of Alabama has been doing and I think is fantastic is growing the ITP programs, so interpreter training programs, so that we get more people who are qualified to interpret. You're not going to be qualified to interpret after taking one or two ASL classes. It is a full-on language. It's sort of like I'm learning Spanish. I'm learning Spanish on Duolingo. At the moment, I think the best I could probably do is order in a restaurant and introduce myself, right? Mm-hmm. And that's definitely a step in the right direction. But the avenues for improvement are just people understanding how to request services, those services being granted, and then improving kind of the number and the availability of interpreters.
And is there anything else that you'd like to add before we go?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I would quote my friend Jay Lee, who says, if you've met one deaf person, you've met one deaf person. So I hope that people will just be inspired to reach out, to meet people, to maybe learn some ASL. And if you have learned any ASL at all, use it. Because it's always going to be welcomed.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Great. Yeah. I appreciate you having me.